So this morning we start Psalm 119, which, as you've gathered even from the pages I've given you, is an extraordinarily long psalm. So most of this morning I'll be pretty well just reading the psalm, like Lectio Divina, as it were. But I'll introduce it for you now.
What is acrostic?
Acrostic means alphabetical. So this is an acrostic psalm, as we saw Psalm 111 was, Psalm 112 was, and we've seen a few others in the past. Each stanza is composed of 8 lines. Each line in the first stanza begins with the first letter of the Hebrew alphabet, Aleph. And each line in the second stanza begins with the second letter of the Hebrew alphabet, which is Bet. And so on through the 22 consonants of the Hebrew language. In including the whole alphabet, in this way, the psalmist is conveying the idea of that what he says is all-encompassing. It covers everything. Now, Psalm 119 is dedicated to the ways in which God has expressed his will, using the following words, which are almost interchangeable with literary variation. So, I'll just explain this. There are 9 words used throughout this enormously long psalm. I've printed them there for you. I've actually put the Hebrew after it. It's a bit much to... I'm not asking you to remember that or anything. But I want to let you know that each time in the translation I've made and offered to you, I've always translated the same Hebrew word with the same English word, just so that, well, I know where I'm going in a way, and you might too. And throughout then, this psalm talks about law, commandments, judgments, statutes, precepts, decrees, word, promise, and way. There's the Hebrew for them, and the number of times they occur through the psalm, usually something like 20 times each of them occurs. Now, each of them might have different nuances. What I've tried to do is go to the... It's a dangerous thing to do. Not dangerous, it needs to be done with care. If you go through the etymology of a word, you often don't get its actual current meaning, sadly. But at least it gives you a likely nuance that is actually in the word itself. So Torah, 24 times, perhaps has this nuance, but I suspect that what the psalmist has done is used them all interchangeably pretty well to cover much the same things, just for literary variation in this long psalm. But a Torah could be the way we are to respond to God's covenant love, as revealed by God. So a Jew reading the word Torah might have that idea of a covenant relationship with God when he uses the word, or when I translate it, law. Commandments, there's not much you can say about that. Judgments, which occurs 23 times, perhaps expresses the idea of an oral verdict resulting from a judgment. That's what it technically means, Mishpatim, the Hebrew, where a magistrate or the king or whoever, the prince who's making the decision, announces his judgment. So it might have that nuance if it's being really technical, though I doubt that. The word statutes, hukim, may, underneath that is the image of being engraved on stone or something, like really firmly, like the Hammurabi scroll or something like that. It's engraved there on a stele or something. So it may have the idea of God's will that's been fixed in writing, in, for example, the Ten Commandments or something like that. Do you see what I'm trying to do? I'm trying to give you possible nuances, and at the end I'm going to say, let's just read it and let them flow over you, because it's not that precise, I don't think. Precepts. Pikudim has the idea of obligations to which God wants to pay special attention. Really watch these. If you see pikudim, you might think, gee, this is really important. I better be careful about this one, especially. decrees, edut. Actually, that comes from the word testimony or witness. So it may have the idea of decrees that are backed by God's taken an oath or promise or witness to something. The word, dabar, very common. God's will as revealed by what God has done in history and creation, because dabar also means deed, word or deed. So that could be the point that's being made there. Promise, something said by God, and way means the derek, the way that God has invited us along. So that's all a bit abstract, I'm sorry, and it's a bit picky perhaps, but it, throughout the psalm you will find all those words being used, I suggest, largely interchangeably. And as we introduce the psalm now, I read to you from Jeremiah chapter 31. This is the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel after those days, says the Yahweh. I will put my law within them. I'll write it on their hearts. And I will be their God, and they shall be my people. The law of God, this is the ideal, written in our hearts. And Psalm 40 reads, I delight to do your will, O my God. Your law is within my heart. And I will read again this beautiful psalm, Psalm 19. We're doing Psalm 119. But in Psalm 19 you have this wonderful little passage which reads, the law of Yahweh is perfect. It revives the soul. The decrees of the Yahweh are sure, making wise the simple. The precepts of Yahweh are right, rejoicing the heart. The commandment of Yahweh is clear, enlightening the eyes. The fear of Yahweh is pure, enduring forever. The ordinances of Yahweh are true and righteous altogether. More to be desired are they than gold, even much fine gold. Sweeter also than honey, the drippings of the honeycomb. Moreover, by them is your servant warned. In keeping them, there is great reward. Now we begin the actual psalm itself, Psalm 119. It's not particularly of any great literary moment. In the church's official reading, a prayer, it's used every day throughout the four-week cycle of the prayer of the church. In that part, it's called the prayer of the day now, but it's a summary or a concentration of what used to be called terse, sext and none. Terse meaning the third hour, 9 o'clock, sext the sixth hour, midday, going from sunset, of course, and known, the ninth hour, which was 3 p.m. And that's the way the Jewish counted their days, from sunset, sunrise to sunset. So those three are now the prayer of the day. And every day, one of these stanzas is used, and it goes on for the whole 4 weeks. On a couple of Sundays through the year, little bits of this, only two Sundays throughout the three-year cycle, little bits of these are used in the responsorial psalm, and there are two other times during the four-week cycle of the liturgy of prayer where, I'll point it out to you when it comes, one of these stanzas is also used at that time. Most of it is only covered in the prayer of the church, the prayer, the day prayer of the church. So let's begin. And as I said at the beginning, it is, I'm going to mainly just read it to you. If you want to explain, just put your hand up and I'll stop everything and, you know, and try and attend to what you want to ask. But otherwise I'll just read it, making very few comments, and at the end I'll try and say something about obedience to God's will, because that's what it's all about. So it's on a very key issue. Stanza 1, every line in this 8 lines here begins in Hebrew with Aleph. That's what I mean by an acrostic psalm. You can't pick that from the English, of course. But let me just enjoy it with you. Aleph. Happy are those whose way is blameless, who follow the law, Torah, obviously in Hebrew, of Yahweh. Happy are those who keep his decrees and seek him with all their heart. Which, of course, makes a nice point, that obedience to the law is within the context of seeking God. Seeking God with all our heart. Well, obviously, we want to know God's will. That's what we're, every spiritual director is on about that. Every retreat is about that. We're always trying to discern, aren't we? What is the most loving thing to do? Where's grace leading me? Where's the will of God in all this? And that's only found by openness and constant. We're never sure of it, in fact, but we do our best to refine our sensitivity. So we want to do God's will. That's what this psalm is saying, and it's about seeking God. Doing God's will without seeking God is just, I don't know what it is, really. You couldn't do it anyhow. It'd be just following the law without any personal involvement. So happy are those who keep his decrees and seek him with all their heart, who do no wrong but follow his way. You have decreed that your precepts are to be kept diligently. Oh, that I was steadfast in keeping your statutes, then I should not be put to blame with my eyes fixed on your commandments. I'll praise you with an upright heart. When I learn your righteous judgments, I will observe your statutes. Do not utterly forsake me. You can already see all those different words used. I think you'd have to say they're used just for literary refinement, or just using different words rather than saying the same word all over again. But the feeling of that is quite good, isn't it? And that's the first stanza, verses 1 to 8. Stanza 2 is Bet, that's the B, same in English, of course, the second letter of their alphabet. And once again, it's made up of 8 lines, all of which begin with the second letter of the Hebrew alphabet, which is the B, the Bet. How can young people keep themselves pure? And the answer, by paying attention to your word. The word pure, of course, well, I shouldn't say of course, in my upbringing, pure, this might tell you more than I want to tell you, but pure always seemed to be attached to sex or something. That's a very important area for purity. But purity means clarity. So it actually applies to absolutely every aspect of human behavior. And when the word pure is used, it doesn't at all focus on sexual purity. It focuses on honesty, motives are correct, like a clear life where every aspect of justice and truth are being respected. And of course sexuality is very important in there, because that's how we love. But I want to detach the word pure from immediately going into one area out of context. How can young people keep themselves pure? How can, in other words, their beautiful character just continually be polluted or whatever by the environment or anything around? How can they, uncontaminated, thank you. How can young people keep themselves pure? By paying attention to your word. That's the answer this wise author says. Listen to you, God. With all my heart I seek you. Don't let me stray from your commandments. I treasure your promise in my heart, so that I may not sin against you. Blessed are you, Yahweh. Teach me your statutes. With my lips I recite all the judgments you have uttered. So God is the one beginning the dialogue all the time, and we're being said, listen. And that's true. God is inspiring your mind and heart and mind all the time. So listen to what God has uttered and follow it. Choose to follow it. I delight in the way of your decrees as much as in all riches. I will meditate on your precepts. I'll fix my eyes on your way. I'll delight in your statutes. I will not forget your word. So once again, all those different words used for God's will, basically. Stanza 3 is Gimel, which is the G, the third letter, also in the Greek alphabet. Alpha, Beta, Gamma. We'll hear Aleph, Bet, Gimel. So, begins with verse 17. Deal bountifully with your servant, so that I may live and observe your word. Open my eyes, so that I may behold wondrous things in your law. I live as an alien in the land. Do not hide your commandments from me. I'm consumed with longing for your judgments at all times. You rebuke the insolent, wretches who wander from your commandments. Take away from me their scorn and contempt, for I have kept your decrees. Even though princes sit plotting against me, your servant will meditate on your statutes. Your decrees are my delight. They are my counselors. So I keep learning by finding your will out, as in the Torah and so on. That's how I learn to live. Not going too fast, am I, for you? It's more just reading, really. The fourth stanza is Dalet, or D, in the Hebrew, in our language. And they all begin with that letter. I am stuck in the dust. Revive me by your word. I told you of my straying, and you answered. Teach me your statutes. Make me understand the way of your precepts, and I will meditate on your wondrous works. My soul melts away in sorrow. Strengthen me with your word. Put false ways far from me, and graciously teach me your law. I have chosen the way of faithfulness. I set your judgments before me. I cling to your decrees, Yahweh. Let me not be put to shame. I hasten along the way of your commandments, for you enlarge my understanding. Stanza 5 is the He, which is our H, the fifth letter of the Hebrew alphabet. So, teach me your way, the way of your statutes, and I will observe it to the end. Give me understanding that I may keep your law and observe it with all my heart. Lead me in the path of your commandments, for I delight in it. Turn my heart to your decrees and not to selfish gain. Turn my eyes away from looking at vanities. Give me life in your way. Confirm to your servant your promise, which is for those who fear you. Turn away the disgrace that I dread, for your judgments are good. See, I have longed for your precepts. In your righteousness, give me life. So just please notice that he's always looking to God to do something. He knows he can't do it on his own, and he's looking for God to initiate grace, which of course God is always doing. Stanza 6, Vav is the W in English, and here it is, the sixth letter of their alphabet, or the V or W, depends on the way you pronounce it, Vav or Wow, there's two ways. It reads like this, verse 41. Let your kindness come to me, Yahweh, the salvation you have promised. Then I shall have an answer for those who taunt me, for I trust in your word. Do not take from my mouth the word of truth, for my hope is in your judgments. I will keep your law continually forever and ever. I shall walk at liberty, for I have sought your precepts. A simple but wonderful insight that freedom doesn't mean doing your own thing. Freedom means living to the full. Freedom means being free from whatever inside or outside stops me really being a human being, loving, creative, and all the rest of it. And yet in our world, sometimes freedom means having your own will, which might be the most corrupt thing that you've got. Do you know what I mean? So freedom, if we're not free from what's inside, all the freedom from outside is pointless. So he's saying there, quite simply, I shall walk at liberty. I'll be free because I've sought out your will, which liberates me. I shall also speak of your decrees before kings and shall not be put to shame. I find my delight in your commandments because I love them. I revere your commandments, which I love, and I will meditate on your statutes. Stanza 7, which begins with verse 49, is the Zed, Zayin. Remember your word to your servant, which has given me grounds for hope. This is my comfort in my distress, that your promise gives me life. The arrogant utterly deride me, but I do not turn away from your law. When I think of your judgments from of old, I take comfort, Yahweh. Hot indignation seizes me because of the wicked, those who forsake your law. Your statutes have been the subject of my songs. Wherever I make my home as your guest, I remember your name in the night, Yahweh. I keep your law. This blessing has fallen to me, for I have kept your precepts. Stanza 8. We don't have this letter in English, but it's het. It's the guttural, like have it in some languages, German and many others, but we don't have it. That guttural there, het. Well, it begins verse 57. Yahweh is my portion. I promise to keep your word. Yahweh is my portion. Portion meaning in the... They were all allotted certain... They weren't really, but in the... legendary mythology of the day, or the Judahites were given that part, you know, and the Ephraimites were given that part. They all had their different, they had them anyhow from ever, but they were assigned their different areas. Well, he's saying what I was assigned was God, Yahweh. You gave yourself to me, so that's better than any part of the country. It's a love relationship. Yahweh is my portion. Excuse me. I promise to keep your word. I implore your favor with all my heart. Be gracious to me according to your promise. When I think of your ways, I turn my steps to your decrees. I hasten to keep your commandments. Though the cords of the wicked ensnare me, I don't forget your law. At midnight I rise to praise you because of your righteous judgments. I'm a companion of all who fear you, of those who keep your precepts. The earth, Yahweh, is full of your kindness. Teach me your statutes. You can see why this is such a long psalm, because, I mean, they love the Torah. So this is like that rabbi kissing the scroll. It means a lot. Stanza 9 is also a letter we don't have in English. I haven't got the foggiest idea how to pronounce it. It's going to sound like T, but they have a T later. It's the Tau is the last letter of their alphabet. So this must be something like, you know, T. In Hindi, you can make three T's depending on which part of your tongue touches which part of the top of the... So we've got all these different things. So this is T, T, or something. But anyhow, it's generally a T sound. Tate, it's called. You have dealt well with your servant Yahweh, according to your word. Teach me good discernment and knowledge, for I believe in your commandments. Before I was humbled, I went astray. But now I obey your word. So he's learnt. You are good and you do good. Teach me your statutes. The arrogant smear me with lies, but with all my heart I keep your precepts. Their hearts are fat and gross, but I delight in your law. It's good for me that I was humbled, so that I might learn your statutes. The law of your mouth is better to me than thousands of gold and silver pieces. So stanza 10 is Yod, which is the Y. Remember that none of these are vowels. The Hebrew is a consonantal language. There are 22 consonants in their language. The vowels are just, they don't even put in their alphabet. So this is Y rather than I, if I could say that, Yod. Because I and Y are pretty, you know, they're heading in the same direction, but it's a sound not just made by the air coming forth, but by the adjustment of the mouth and tongue and all that, Yod. Your hands have made and fashioned me. Give me understanding that I may learn your commands. Those who fear you shall see me and rejoice, because I have hoped in your word. I know, Yahweh, that your judgments are just, and that in faithfulness you've humbled me. Let your kindness become my comfort, according to the promise, your promise to your servant. Let your mercy come to me, that I may live. For your law is my delight. Let the arrogant be put to shame, because they've subverted me with guile. As for me, I meditate on your precepts. Let those who fear you turn to me, so that they may know your decrees. May my heart be blameless in your statutes, so that I may not be put to shame. Put to shame means fail, fall away, sin again, you know, whatever it could mean. Stanza 11, now you're coming back to our alphabet a bit, this is K. So we've gone a bit of a journey, now we'll get K, L, M, N, P, Q, and R, we'll feel at home again. So it's the cuff, K. Verse 81. I languish for your salvation, I hope in your word. My eyes grow dim with watching for your promise. I ask, when will you comfort me? For I become like a wineskin in the smoke. Yet I have not forgotten your statutes. How long must your servant put up with this? When will you judge those who persecute me? The arrogant have dug pitfalls for me. They flout your law. All your commandments are enduring. I am persecuted without cause. Strengthen me. They've almost made an end of me on earth. But I have not forsaken your precepts. In your kindness, spare my life, so that I may keep the decrees that you have spoken. Stanza 12, verse 89 is Lamed, the L in English. Yahweh exists forever. Your word is firmly fixed in heaven. Your faithfulness endures to all generations. You've established the earth and it stands firm. By your judgment they stand today, for all things are your servants. If your law had not been my delight, I would have perished in my misery. I'll never forget your precepts, for by them you have given me life. It's rather beautiful. I am yours. Save me, for I have sought your precepts. The wicked lie in wait to destroy me, but I observe your decrees. I have seen a limit to all perfection. But your commandment is exceedingly broad. Stanza 13 is the M, Mem in Hebrew. We just had K, L, M, and we'll have N in a minute, so it's running through our alphabet. Verse 97, how I love your law. It's my meditation all day long. Your commandment makes me wiser than my enemies, for it's always with me. I have more understanding than all my teachers, for your decrees are my meditation. I understand more than the aged, for I keep your precepts. I keep my steps from every evil way in order to follow your word. I do not turn away from your judgments, for you have taught me. How sweet are your words to my taste, sweeter than honey to my mouth. Through your precepts I get understanding, therefore I hate every false way. Now stanza 14, just for your curiosity here, is one of the stanzas that isn't just in the prayer of the day, but is picked out, and it's used in fact on the vigil of the Sunday of week two, as the evening prayer one, they call it. So the evening prayer just prior to the Sunday. Saturday night always has the evening prayer for the following day, because every Sunday is like Easter, of course. So it's a vigil prayer on the Sunday of the second week of the prayer of the church. You'll find this there. So we could expect it to be something the church has looked at and thought, well, we want them to hear this more than once in the 4 weeks. Your word is a lamp to my feet and a light to my path. I have sworn an oath and confirmed it to observe your righteous judgments. I am severely afflicted. Give me life, Yahweh, according to your word. Accept my offerings of praise, Yahweh. Teach me your judgments. My life is continually at risk, but I do not forget your law. The wicked have laid a snare for me, but I do not stray from your precepts. Your decrees are my heritage forever. They are the joy of my heart. I incline my heart, bend it, incline it, to perform your statutes forever to the end. Stanza 15 is the S, but again, it's an S I don't know how to pronounce, because there's another S coming later. Samek, it's called. Now, how you pronounce that S, distinct from the Sin and Shin, I don't actually know. But anyhow, there it is. It's some kind of a sound. Verse 113, I hate the deceitful, but I love your law. You are my hiding place, my shield. I hope in your word. Go away from me, you evildoers, that I may keep the commandments of my God. Uphold me according to your promise, that I may live, and let me not fail to attain that for which I wait. Hold me up, that I may be safe, and have regard for your statutes continually. You spurn all who go astray from your statutes, for their cunning is in vain. All the wicked of the earth you count as dross. The leftovers, when they've refined a bit of the metals out of the soil, just the junk that they've cast aside. Therefore I love your decrees. My flesh trembles for fear of you. I am in awe at your judgments. Stanza 16 is another guttural, a very heavy guttural. Ayin, it's called. Ayin, so it's something like that. The is there at the back of the throat with the tongue. This is right down in the bowels of the glottal area. Ayin, I don't know how to do it exactly. I have act, but it's a glottal stop, but with vigour. There's another one we've already done. Aleph and Ayin are the two from down here, glottal kind of sounds, but they are hiccups. They are consonants, just made with a part of the throat that we don't normally use. Well, Ayin is the strongest of them, and it says, I have acted according to right judgment and justice. Do not leave me to my oppressors. Guarantee your servant's well-being. Don't let the godless oppress me. My eyes fail from watching for your salvation. Watching, 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 and the eyes are just getting so tired they can't hardly see anymore. And for the fulfillment of your righteous promise, deal with your servant according to your kindness. Teach me your statutes. I am your servant. Give me understanding so that I may know your decrees. It's time for Yahweh to act, for your law has been broken. Truly I love your commandments more than gold, more than fine gold. Truly I direct my steps by all your precepts. I hate every false way. Those last two verses and the next couple, by the way, are used on the 17th Sunday of year A in the responsorial psalm. So they've tucked them in as well there. Stanza 17 is the P, pe, our P sound. Your decrees are wonderful, therefore I keep them. The unfolding of your word gives light. It imparts understanding to the immature. It's one of the things that happened to us in our youth, me and my generation, which is you, most of you. Some bit younger, obviously. But we were taught in a way like there was a lot we weren't allowed to do because we were told not to do, and the church told us, and we're all part of the church's life. So basically we didn't do it. In a lot of areas, we did what we were told within the family and within the religious group we're in. And we did it out of fear, partly, but also obedience and respect and a whole lot of things. And my suspicion is that a lot of us, because we did what we were told as we were young, actually maybe got through difficult periods of our life reasonably intact. And then we learnt later the reasons and we... So it wasn't all good, but it certainly wasn't all bad. When you're in a culture as of now where you can do what you blim well like and where there's really no pressure to go to Mass on Sunday or to not do this or to have sex before marriage or, you know what I mean? There's no pressure anyhow from society. I think it's much worse because you're back to the peer group and the immature mind trying to work out what's best, and people hurt and get hurt and hurt others and... in experiment and feel free, and I feel for the young people because it's much harder really, and that's put too glibly I guess and too simplistically, but somehow we've got to, we're never going to go back and say look, it's a mortal sin to miss Mass on Sunday and put people through that. You can't do that. That was bad, but that there be a strong culture that actually wisely, where the adults can preserve the little tree till it's got a good strong trunk and can face the weather. You know, we've got hot houses and we've got places to protect things, and we do protect little saplings till they... But at the moment, the saplings are not very protected by society, and poor parents and grandparents are a bit of, you know, it's a bit hard because there's so much pressures. In fact, there's positive pressure that's ugly and deceptive of the young, where adults are advertising stuff for the young that they know doesn't work, but they're making money out of it. I mean, it's diabolical, it's absolutely evil, and it's rampant, and we do nothing about it. We complain if people pollute the river or the forest. If they pollute the mind, we call it freedom of speech. We've actually lost the plot awfully in that area, I think, and that was all imparted by this little... The unfolding of your word gives light. Well, all of us had to walk in the light of our parents' advice because we, for a long time before we saw the light and thought, oh, thank you. You know, it took a while to know why, but thank God we had that. It imparts understanding to the immature who need it. With open mouth I sigh because I long for your commandments. Turn to me, be gracious to me, according to your judgment towards those who love your name. Keep my steps steady according to your promise. Never let guilty deeds have dominion over me. Redeem me from human oppression that I may keep your precepts. Make your face shine on your servant. Teach me your statutes. My eyes stream with tears because your law is not kept. Stanza 18, they call it a letter. It's the nearest we can get to it is like a TS, 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 it's one sound. So tsade. And my understanding is it is like a TS put together in one t, like that. You are righteous, Yahweh. Your judgments are right. You have established your decrees in righteousness and in all faithfulness. Zeal consumes me because my foes forget your word. Your promise is well tested, and your servant loves it. I am small and despised, but I do not forget your precepts. Your righteousness is an everlasting righteousness. Your law is true. Trouble and anguish have come upon me, but your commandments are my delight. Your decrees are righteous forever. Give me understanding that I may live. Stanza 19, which is the Q, cough, it's called, is also one of the two stanzas that occurs twice in the Liturgy of the Word. You'll find this on the morning prayer of the Saturday of weeks 1 and 3 as a morning prayer. So it must be something a bit special about it for it to be so chosen. Well, you see yourself. Verse 145. With my whole heart I cry, answer me, Yahweh. I will keep your statutes. I cry to you, save me that I may observe your decrees. I rise before dawn and cry for help. No doubt that's why it's in the morning prayer. I rise before dawn and cry for help. I put my hope in your word. My eyes are awake before each watch of the night. 9 p.m., midnight, 3 a.m. That I may meditate on your promise. In your kindness, hear my voice. Yahweh, in your justice, preserve my life. Those who pursue me with evil intent draw near. They are far from your law. Yet you are near, Yahweh. All your commandments are true. Long ago I learned about your decrees, that you've established them forever. Stanza 20 is the resh, it's the R. We've only got RST to go, so this is R. Verse 153. Look at my oppression, rescue me, for I do not forget your law. Plead my cause, redeem me, give me life according to your promise. Salvation is far from the wicked, for they do not seek your statutes. Great is your tender compassion, Yahweh. Give me life according to your just judgment. Many are my persecutors and my adversaries, yet I do not swerve from your decrees. I look at the faithless with disgust, because they do not keep your commands. Consider how I love your precepts. Preserve my life according to your kindness. The sum of your word is truth, and every one of your righteous judgments endures forever. And Psalm 21, it's the one letter, in fact, in Hebrew, it does have two pronunciations, but they don't count it twice. If it's got the dot above the left, looking at it, if it's got the dot above the left thing, it's called sin, and it's an S sound. If the dot is above the right one, as I've put it there, it's shin, and it's got an SH sound. But it's the one letter. And it reads, verse 161, Princes persecute me without cause, but my heart stands in awe of your word. I rejoice at your word like one who finds great spoil. I hate and abhor falsehood, but I love your law. 7 times a day I praise you for your righteous judgments. Now, what I'm about to say, I'm not absolutely certain of, because I haven't got I didn't take the time. I tried to get the time, but didn't get it. But I also haven't got the facilities here to check this. So if you know, you can answer it for yourself. But I think that there's a connection between that verse, seven times a day I praise you, you can understand the seven being a symbolic number, and the practice of the early church, the monks and then the priests and nuns and so on, with regard to the liturgy of the office. The only problem with it is there are actually 8 hours in the thing. But I think one of them, and I'm not sure which one, I'll make a suggestion in a moment, is probably a later addition that's come in. That's what I think. Now, the office of the church is divided in this way, as you probably know. There's matins, it's called, or nocturnes, another name for it. Or sunrise. So it's dark. That's matins. Then there's one at sunrise and there's another at sunset. The one at sunrise is Lord's praise for the new day. The one at sunset is called Vespers, which I'm sure you know, as the sun is setting. Okay. There's one at night too, in the dark of the night, but it's at the night. It's Complin. It completes the office. It's a night prayer in the dark. So now you've got two in the dark, sunrise and sunset. Are you right? So that's 4. The 3 in the middle are named according to the hours. Terse, which is the third hour, we've mentioned already this evening, that's 9 o'clock, for third hour from sunrise. Terse, sext, which is the 6th hour, midday, and none, which is the 9th hour, clearly, these are all from Latin, the 9 is the 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So that would add to 7. But there is another one called prime. It's the first hour of the day, which means it's an hour after sunrise, hour after Lord's. Technically, it's at 7 o'clock. So I suspect that's the extra one that popped in. But I'm not sure whether maybe the extra one that popped in is the Complin, the small, rather lovely night prayer that came in, and I don't know which one. And I may have that all wrong. But I think there is a connection, because you can imagine them having 7 hours during the day, just because of the whole symbolic number of it. Enough on that. That was Psalm 119, verse 164. 7 times a day I praise you for your righteous judgments. Great peace they have who love your law. Nothing can make them stumble. I hope for your salvation, Yahweh. I fulfill your commandments. I keep your decrees. I love them exceedingly. I keep your precepts and decrees, for all my ways are before you. You can see where I'm living, so that's what I do. And the last verse, stanza 22, is Tau, the T. Let my cry come before you, Yahweh. Give me understanding according to your word. Let my supplication come before you. Rescue me according to your promise. My lips pour forth praise because you teach me your statutes. My tongue sings of your promise, for all your judgments are just, all your commandments are just. Let your hand be ready to help me, for I have chosen your precepts. I long for your salvation, Yahweh, and your law is my delight. Let me live that I may praise you. Let your judgments help me. I have gone astray like a lost sheep. Seek out your servant, for I do not forget your commands. Commands. That's Psalm 119. It's pretty repetitive and all that, but let it stand on its own. It's enormously long, as you can see, 176 verses. That never happens. And I thought I'd just spend a few little minutes now relaxing you back from that by this topic, talking about obedience, because that's what the whole topic's about, surely. Just a few observations on obedience. The word obeying, look at the Latin, firstly. You know this, but I'll just put it there. Obaudiens. obedience is obey. And that's obviously where our English word comes from. Now the obedience comes from two Latin words, a verb first or a participle, and then the preposition at the front, the adverbial preposition. Audiens means listening, as you well know from the word audience, and ob, as in objection, obfuscation, obliteration, you know, ob means right up against, ob. So obedience means listening from right up in contact with, not from a distance or anything, just from listening close. So that's the Latin. So technically, according to the word, obeying means listening closely. It's really important. It doesn't mean doing what you're told, because what you're told may well be wrong. But having listened closely, you may have to decide you won't do it. You can't do it. You refuse to do it. You're going to become a conscientious objector or whatever. And you must make that stand. And doing what you're told should never be an excuse for any kind of behaviour, good or bad for that matter. So the conscience is the key. You have to make your own decisions, and you make them, but having listened really closely. And if you're listening closely, whether you follow or don't follow, you're being obedient in the technical sense. I hope that's clear. Just from the word, I mean. Now, that, instructive as that is, it's much more instructive when you look at the other languages of Greek and Hebrew, which is our biblical languages. Look at Greek, the whole New Testament written in Greek. The Old Testament, as it came into the church, was the Greek Old Testament. So Greek is an enormously significant language in our culture and in our religious culture. And in Greek, the word for obeying, I mean, I've given you the first person because I often do that as a verb, but hypakuo means I obey. H-Y-P, hyp, it's like the French U sound, hypakuo means I obey. But that comes from two words. One is akuo, which again means listening. Acoustics, we've got in the word akuo. Akuo means listening, and hypo means under, as you know from hyper and hypo. So in Greek, obeying means listening from under, from a position of humility and respect and recognition of the authority of the one you're listening to. You know, so that's got just a nice little quality, but it's still listening. When you go to Hebrew, without all the qualifications, the verb shama in Hebrew simply means, because it's a much simpler language, it's much less complex or subtle than Greek or English for that matter, of course. It's a small language, ancient Hebrew. Shama means listening, it means heeding, it means obeying, all of them. So it means listening again. Shamuel means the one who listens to El, God. That's the meaning of the name Samuel, the one listening to God. So in all those languages, Hebrew, Greek, Latin, and therefore English, obeying means listening. And then discerning from listening. That's the first bit. The other point I want to make here is just a meditation, really. Look at Jesus obeying. Psalm 119, however beautiful or simple or repetitive you might find it, it's right on the knocker. And here's Jesus saying, my food is to do the will of him who sent me and to complete his work. These are all from John. You could take them from many places, but I've just done them. I seek to do not my own will, but the will of the one who sent me. The one who sent me is with me. He has not left me alone. I always do what's pleasing to him. Now, they're all statements of Jesus as found in the Gospel of the Beloved Disciple, and you know that, but it's clearly central to Jesus' life. Now, it was also central to what he said about our lives. Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven. It's the one who does the will of my Father in heaven. So that's the key, doing God's will. There's nothing else to do. And whoever does the will of my Father in heaven is my brother and sister and mother. You remember that. They're both taken from Matthew, you could take them from Luke or Mark, but they're just, So clearly obedience is at the centre of what we're talking about. Now some quotes just from the saints to reinforce this, not that you need it, but I'll just share with you. Here's a couple about Mary, first from the New Testament, the greatest of the saints. "Here am I, the servant of the Lord, let it be with me according to your word." The word spoken by Mary, as Luke presents it, listening to God's word and saying, "Okay, I'll do it, love me." And when she goes to visit Elizabeth, this is Luke again, "Blessed is she," that's Mary, "who believed that what was spoken to by the Lord would be fulfilled." She listened to God's word, she heeded it, and she followed it, knowing that it would produce fruit in her life. Jesus and the rest. Here's Teresa. I'll just give you one each because they're all so beautiful and I could go forever on it. Teresa of Avila says, "Prepare yourself with determination and every possible effort to bring your will into conformity with God's will. The greatest perfection attainable along the spiritual path lies in this conformity. In perfect conformity to God's will lies all our good." Now she's very clear, not mucking around, that's perfectly consistent with all her teaching. Here's John of the Cross saying exactly the same. All the saints say it. "What does it profit you to give God one thing if he asks of you another? Consider what it is that God wants and then do that. You will, as a result, satisfy your heart better than with something towards which you yourself